You're listening to a Cripple and Co. production.
This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by clonawilly.com. ClonaWilly and ClonaPussy are do-it-yourself molding kits that allow anyone to make an exact replica of any penis or vulva into a sex toy at home. So if you go to clonawilly.com and you use the code Andrew Gerza, so just spell my whole name, at checkout you can get the ClonaWilly or ClonaPussy kit and anything else site-wide at 20% off. Wow, this is a deal that cannot be cloned. I have been in contact with my friend Victoria over there, and they're so friendly, they're so kind, they really want to make sure that if you want to create your own ClonaWilly or ClonaPussy molding kit of your own body, they want to make it accessible for you, they want to listen to your questions, they want to help you where they can. So if this is something you're interested in, please head over to ClonaWilly.com and use my promo code Andrew Gerza right now to get 20% off site-wide. Thanks again to ClonaWilly for sponsoring this episode. This episode of Disability After Dark has been brought to you by Come As You Are. Come As You Are is Canada's only worker-owned co-op sex shop. Trans-owned and operated, Come As You Are carefully reviews and curates their selection of sex toys, books, and DVDs. Now you can get 15% off your next purchase at comeasyouare.com using coupon code AFTERDARK. Content warning. The language, content, and discussion found within this episode of Disability After Dark will be explicit. Listener discretion advised.
This is a podcast that looks at disability stories. It's like sitting down with a really close friend to have a real conversation about disability, sexuality, and everything else about the disability experience that we don't talk about. The things about being disabled, we keep in the dark. Here is your deliciously disabled host, disability awareness consultant, Andrew Gerza.
Hello, hello, friends. Welcome to the show, friends, and thank you so much for clicking on this brand new episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories. I am your delectably disabled daddy host, Andrew Gerza. Let us get comfy, cozy, and crippled and get the episode started, shall we? I hope everybody's doing well on this Sunday as you're listening to me. I'm feeling the weight of being almost 40 as we record this. I'm recording this on Thursday, March 7th, so I'm like literally less than 2 months to 40. Such a big fucking milestone for all of us. But I think when you're disabled with severe disabilities, 40 feels like a really, really big, important thing to think about and navigate, because when we were younger with disabilities, you know, our life expectancies were not the same as they are now. So 40 feels, I don't know, it just feels intense to me. I feel in a way like I'm already there in terms of my body, but I'm not there in terms of my mind yet. I found some gray in my beard recently, which was like really daddy for me. I was like, wow, that feels super daddy-ish to me. But also I feel like I don't have a long-term partner. I don't have like a house. I don't live in, you know, I don't live in with all these ideas that able-bodied folks have. I feel like in many ways, while I'm 40, I feel like I'm emotionally like 20 or 25 sometimes because of my disability and feeling so stunted. So as that's nearing down on me a little bit as I think about spring. I'm thinking about, wow, I'm going to get older this spring. I'm going to hit another milestone this spring. And as a severely disabled person, that feels both good and bad. And I wonder, for you listening, how do you feel as a disabled person aging? How does that feel for you? I'd love to hear your thoughts. So if you want to email me and tell me how aging feels for you, let me know. I did a panel the other day for a disability organization in Ottawa, actually a festival organization in Ottawa, and they used severely disabled to describe me, and I felt so seen. It was so awesome for them to use that terminology and for it to be something that I am now associated with. It felt really good because that's how I've been feeling, and to hear that language by somebody that was introducing me felt... I felt really, really supported, and that was really cool, and I would love to bring my experience of being severely disabled to you ever. So if you're doing a panel or if you are a university professor, I know a lot of university profs assign disability aftercare to their students. If you're a disability prof and you want me to come talk about being severely disabled to your students, I would love to. Please contact me by going to andrewgerza.com, and I would love to work with you. I also want to give a shout out to my sponsors for this podcast. I just got a renewal from both of my sponsors this year, the awesome Come As You Are, the trans-owned and operated sex shop in Toronto, just renewed for their 8th year of renewal with me. That's so, so amazing. Thank you for the support of this little show that I make for my bedroom. And also, clonawilly.com has supported me for another year as well. So I just wanted to give a proper shout out to these sponsors. It means a lot to me that you would sponsor a little homegrown podcast like mine. If you ever want to get some ad space on the show for a few months, please head over to andrewgerza.com/rates and consider booking with me so that your disability-centric thing can be shouted out on the show. But enough of my rambling for today. I feel like I've rambled enough. Let's get to the awesome show today and shine a light on disability together. On the show today, I sit down with my new friend, Joseph Kibler, who is an amazing content creator, actor, writer, producer out of New York City. He lives with HIV and cerebral palsy, and we had a really cool chat about his connection to HIV and disability, what it was like for him coming out as HIV positive at such a young age, and what that was like for him, and we talk about how theater saved his life. We talk about what it's like being a disabled content creator. We talk about feeling like we're not enough in certain communities, and feeling like we don't have enough space in a bunch of communities that we occupy. We talk about his marriage to his amazing wife, who also has disabilities, and what that's been like for him. We talk about ableism and so much more in this episode. He was really fun and really chill to sit down with. He called himself a short king throughout the episode, and that's one of my favorite things that a guy will use to describe himself. I love it. So he is a really, really fun content creator who does a lot of work on disability, talking about disability, dispelling myths around disability. I really, really enjoyed chatting with him. It was such an organic, fun chat that I'm excited for you to hear. So enough of my rambling, enough of the intro. Here is my new friend, Joseph Kibler, right now on Disability After Dark. Joseph, hello.
Hi, thanks so much for having me on today.
Hi, it's such a pleasure to have you here. It's so nice to finally meet you. I've been following your social media for a while now, and you're kind of a big deal out there. So that's awesome.
Well, it's been a very interesting time on there, that's for sure. I'm just glad people are gravitating towards it and towards disability humor, disability content, HIV content, and awareness, and just pets, but you know, who can not love a good pet?
I mean, we can all become famous if we have cool pets. I mean, of course, because you know, that's what TikTok is for, right? Pets.
Yeah.
So, other than following your social media and kind of seeing you kind of blow up there, I didn't really know much about you. So can you introduce yourself to the audience? Tell us a bit about who you are, what you do.
Yes. My name is Joseph Kibler. I am a actor, writer, and content creator. I'm based in New York. I've been an actor now for over going on 17 years, and been a writer over the last few years as a first as a love of the writing itself, and also as a means of getting diverse content out there that is disability and HIV focused. And as of a few years ago, I got into content creating, but I was born with cerebral palsy and HIV, and that's kind of led me through my journey right now.
Cool. Well, you're born with the best of the palsies. Cerebral palsy is the best, just in case you didn't know. I'm calling it out. No, I'm kidding. If anybody else there has another palsy, it's great too. It's a joke. I'm kidding. I see your kitty behind you, and that looks amazing. I want to have a nap in the sunbeam too. That looks great.
Always. I got four of them. They're all napping in different
Oh,
sunbeams.
wow. Amazing. So you're a cat dad.
Yeah, I'm three cats and a dog. So,
Amazing.
and they're all 14. They're all seniors.
Oh wow, great. So you're like a cool seniors home for animals. Awesome.
Yeah.
So you said you have CP and HIV. So can you share with us how those disabilities play a role in your day-to-day life?
Yeah, so in my scenario, what happened for me was my HIV actually caused my cerebral palsy. So it affected the basal ganglia and caused calcification. It was part of a rare disorder, but growing up, it's kind of interesting to have both a invisible disability and a visible disability
Yep.
constantly battling with one another, especially day to day, because it's like if you see me out and about, you kind of get it. You see the wheelchair, you see a cane, some people who are used to seeing cerebral palsy can spot cerebral
I knew
palsy.
right away when I
Yeah.
watched your content. I was like, oh yeah, he's one of us for sure, for sure.
Exactly. And so it's very interesting in that way to then have this other part of me that is affected day to day by, like, if my immune system's not doing well, constantly getting sick, constantly struggling with that kind of life and the stigma behind HIV. So a lot of, like, growing up for me was, I always called it was like a felt like a video game, like getting through all these different bosses and these different levels. Whereas, like, cool, we're on board with the disability, you're good with that. But wait, also, we got this battle and you got this other boss to deal with, and that's HIV. And so it was one of those things where, ironically, because of my HIV, it felt like I just got super adjusted to my disability, my physical disability,
Yeah.
and kind of mentally okay with that because I was always preoccupied with the stigmas of HIV, and that felt way more overwhelming within my social circles. And I'm like, people won't comprehend that. They'll get disability eventually, or they'll be weird to me, but I at least know right away, which is
Yeah.
weirdly comforting as opposed to the friendships you create with people. And then suddenly you're like, hey, it's the early 2000s. I got to share this thing with you. Are you no longer going to be my friend? Cool. All
Yeah,
right.
yeah.
So,
And you
yeah.
know, the stigma around HIV is so, you know, it's so, there's so much mythology around it. There's so much like, there's so much queer phobia and so much like sex negativity around that, that I can imagine
Yes.
being a young person with multiple disabilities was like, this is a lot to deal with.
It was, and I mean, I was, it's what led me into theater. I tell this story a lot, but I had found out, so I found out I was HIV positive when I was 11 because my mom couldn't figure out when to tell me, and it was a hard thing. I don't blame her because I wouldn't want to be in that position either.
Yeah.
My father unknowingly transmitted HIV to my mom after cheating on her, so that was kind of a big deal in our life, and
Yeah.
didn't know when to tell me. And I found out by accident because a doctor let it slip that wasn't my primary, that
Oh,
didn't
wow.
situation. So
Oh,
I was just in a checkup one day, and he just kind of blurts it out, and I kind of hear it, and my mom looks at me, and we have this long car ride home where she tells me everything and then ends the whole talk with, and you can't tell anyone, because at that time kids were being kicked out of school, they were being protested against. Parents of other kids in schools were like, I, not my child. I don't want my child around someone with HIV.
oh,
So
wow.
keep it secret. And the way life is, because life is a big joke, let's just say what it
I mean,
is.
it is, you're right. Yep.
It's just a big joke. The week after I found out, guess what we're learning in health class?
About HIV. About
HIV and HIV death rates and all the people it...
Oh, God.
I'm sitting there as an 11-year-old in class being like, I can't tell anyone. This thing I didn't even know existed, I suddenly now have. And also, here are all the people that have died from it.
Oh,
and I can't
wow.
tell anyone. And I held on to that secret for about 6 years before wow. I told anyone. And it wasn't until I got into theater and I was doing workshops and doing a theater camp with a lovely husband and wife writer duo who, if you've ever done theater, it is like therapy. And they had
it really
us,
is. It is.
It really is. And they had us go on stage and the exercise this day was, I was 17. Go on stage, look at your peers, and tell them something you've never told anyone. And I'm like, I'm never going to get a platform. Like this is literally the time. And I was so depressed and stressed out about life and feeling overwhelmed. And I'm like, I need harboring that kind of secret just eats at you.
Of course.
And I'm like, you get rid of this, whether it's going to be a good situation or not. I need to unload this. And I went up on stage and I said, my name is Joseph Kibler. I'm HIV positive. And the overwhelming support and love I got from everybody in the room, it was like, boom, okay, theater just saved my life. So I'm giving my whole life up to theater. And it was that, and I never looked back. And I put my whole self into acting and was like, this is my space. This is what's going to make me better.
Brave shit, man. That I don't know. Like, I wow, I don't know. Like, I've done theater and I've done scary things on stage, but I don't know if I could go up in front of somebody and be like, here's my life. I don't know. Like, that's a lot.
It was, and it's, you know, I think about it. There's such a thing when you're a teenager. I think so often that I was a braver person when I knew less about the world. And there is something in that where it's like, the more I've grown, the more I've become an adult, the more I've let things like society like scare me and the way that people are, when you start realizing how much there is in the world, you realize you start shutting down a little. And I look back at like all my writing from when I was a teenager, the things we did as teenagers sometimes, the way we spoke, there was this non-fear, this way of like, I look at those moments and I'm like, I don't think I could do that now if I was.
Oh yeah, I definitely couldn't do it now. Almost 40, I definitely am like the shyest version of myself right now.
Exactly, it's so funny how that happens. I look at like lyrics and like poems I wrote, and I'm like, who is this person who is so emotionally available?
Such a badass, yeah,
yeah. And it's just like I've allowed like the whole structure of the society and politics and all these things consume me to a point of like being afraid to say anything anymore, or being afraid just as a person, just to be, you know, open and not worried that people are going to be mean. And so that's, anyway, it was a journey. And, you know, now I'm so open about my HIV, and it was because I was so secluded and forced to kind of keep it a secret that it's almost like if you meet me now, it's like, hi, I'm Joseph. I have HIV. And it's that quick. And it's partly defense mechanism. It's, I want to get this information about what's important to me, what I am, my identifiers, so quickly that we don't create a bond or we don't create anything before
you know
I'm,
that.
Before I know you're cool, because I don't have time to waste on it.
Yeah. I feel the same way with, and it's not the same, but it's similar in like, I call myself severely disabled. And so I've started using that openly and saying that before I meet anybody, hi, I'm Andrew, I have severe disabilities. How are you? Like, this is what it is. And I totally relate to the feeling of like, I have to tell you, because if we're hanging out and I need you for something and that scares the shit out of you, we can't hang out again.
Yeah, and especially, you just have to, you have to protect yourself. And sometimes in protecting yourself, being vulnerable is protecting yourself by just speaking your mind and being like, this is what I need. This is my wants. These are my needs. These are what's going to go on with me in a day. And if you're not good with it, if you're not okay with it, then let's move on.
Yeah. And I, you know, it's so hard to, I think, you know, we always say to people, like, if you're not okay, that's cool. But I hate saying that because it's not cool. Like, you deal with it and you move on. But it hurts your heart when you're like, I thought you could handle this. Like, okay.
Yeah. I mean, It does hurt. You're right. It's no, there's no, it's cool as in we won't continue and I'll learn from this moment.
Like grow past you, and it's fine.
Exactly. And you know, I did that so much with HIV, especially with the dating world, where I got to a point where I was trying to balance, when do I say it? When do I not say it? How far, like, into the date do I wait? Do I even wait till we get to the date before I even say it? Because, and I went through so many different versions of what to do, because it does, it sucks when you're in that world and you're in that environment and your things are going well, and you share this thing about you, whether it's that you have a severe disability and you need people to help you, or you have HIV or whatever it might be, and you just watch that
You
person.
watch their face like drop and you're like, okay, I guess it's over now. Like, I guess where I am now. All right.
And everything you thought about, all those things you kind of imagine are
Came
gone.
true. Or they came, or like,
Or they came, yeah.
or they came true and you're like, great, I thought you would be able to be cooler than this. Like,
Yeah.
and so, you know, I've you're happily married, right?
Yes.
And
Yes.
so, like, I've stopped dating simply because I don't have the energy or the time to deal with the that face of like, oh, okay, you're rejecting me? Cool.
It's, I mean, I don't envy anyone. It's such a tough world, dating in general, and inviting someone, if you're able to find someone you connect with, hold on to them. I really
Yeah,
do.
like really. One of the things I wanted to ask you about, because I know you do it a lot on your you've talked about it a little bit on your social media, and you've talked about pansexuality a little bit. Can we chat a little bit about that?
For me, I had kind of always known that I was pansexual, or at least at a single time I knew I was bisexual, which later became pansexual for me, just on a personal growth level, and just realizing what terminology means and language, and adjusting to that. But I was, you know, we talked about that thing earlier, the game levels, the boss levels. But I had to get people on board with disability, that I had to get people on board with HIV, and that was consumed so much of my early adolescence that by the time I started coming out about being HIV positive, I was noticing a trend, which is I was over and over again being able to educate people about being born HIV positive, and that people who are quote unquote presenting as heterosexual, and especially in my group, which was like cis white males, whatever, were HIV positive, it was like I changed people's worlds around, because they that idea of like that can happen to you, that was so changing for them that it made them rethink who and what HIV was and how it affected people. And I had done a documentary about my life and about that. And
Ooh,
I would,
where do we watch that? I would watch that.
it'll be on another streamer soon. We had a distributor who went under a few years ago, and it's been like a whole thing getting it off of the aggregated sites and onto new ones.
Okay.
But we'll have that one on there soon. But I had traveled with it, and I had done all this education, and you know, deep down, I had always known, like, well, I'm not hetero. So when they're saying heterosexual, I'm like, well, I know that's not me. But now I've gotten myself into this position, this
Platform where
idea.
I can't say, like, actually, I'm.
I'm queer, or I'm pansexual, and because I was able to finally get past that stigma of tying HIV to only the queer community. So in my eyes, the moment I started saying, hey, I'm pansexual, what was going to happen, or I felt like what was going to happen, was people were like, got it, you're queer, you're HIV positive. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah, of course you
It's just,
are.
and brush everything else aside and not listen and not let it actually affect them, or think I was lying, or not trust me in some weird way. And eventually it was again another one of those moments where I'm like, I gotta be honest about myself. And I say it's ironic because my wife, who is also pansexual, how we connected in the first place was discussing being pansexual,
Amazing.
and we were like, you know, she had come out, and I was like, how'd you do that? Like, that I was so blown away by the way she did it, and it was so eloquent, and it was just very much matter of fact, and like, this is what it is, and I hope you can understand. And I messaged her. We had met through like online and Facebook, and we shared the same agent because we're both actors. So that's how we started connecting, and we started talking, and then we fell for each other. And now we're in this situation where we're a married pansexual couple that looks like just a heteronormative relationship on the outside. And we're constantly battling that and trying to tell people like, no, well, yeah, we are hetero presenting, but we're queer. We're here. We like, we are
we're
attracted
with
to everyone and we're
you. Yeah.
with you. And like, what, you know, we find ourselves in the middle ground, which I've always been as somebody who is ambulatory, where I find I'm in the middle of a lot of spaces. So that's like getting acceptance from the LGBTQIA community, queer community. And then because I'm in a hetero-presenting relationship, feeling sometimes like I'm on the outskirts or I'm pushed out of that community because they're like, well, you're with a woman, so what does it matter? Sometimes. And then on the other side of that, the people who are not are like, well, you're going to go to hell, so what does it matter?
Great.
And then, you know, in the disabled community, sometimes I felt that where it's like I'm ambulatory and I could be on my cane, I could be in a wheelchair, and there's sometimes a little bit of a rift. Like we talk about, you have to talk about it, the hierarchy.
And, like, you don't feel disabled enough because the hierarchy is bullshit. The hierarchy is crap.
And in casting and auditions, we'll do as an actor, I'll come in and sometimes I'll be too disabled for one role, but not disabled enough for another role. And it's just this interesting thing. And even in the HIV community, the HIV veterans who've been around for so long, who I'm honored to know, sometimes it took them a while to accept me because they saw me as this young guy who probably was just got HIV last week and doesn't understand, even though I was on the original.
Just got HIV last week? Wow.
Like it would happen. And I'd find myself always in the middle of this, of these worlds. And like, you know, I was born HIV positive. I was on the first infant trials with under Dr. Fauci at National Institute of Health.
How cool.
Cause I was born a twin. And so me and my twin brother were brought there because obviously they had an opportunity to test the same DNA and see different medications and what they could do and how effective they could be. Unfortunately, my brother got pneumonia and he passed away at 16 months.
So,
but we were, you know, there and from the beginning. And so it is interesting to me of like, you know, this battle constantly, I find a theme in my life of like, I'm in the center of a lot of worlds and trying to find acceptance on both sides of it.
Yeah, and I feel that way with my experience of being queer and disabled too. Like, in queer spaces, I am too disabled for you. And in disabled spaces, how dare I be queer? Like, what?
It's mind-blowing. Like,
yeah.
And people just assume that because we're within the minority or diverse in general, that that means automatically we're accepted into these spaces. And I think people need to realize that even communities that call themselves communities exclude.
Oh yeah, I have trouble when people say, we're all the disability community. I'm like, no, we're not. We're a bunch of smaller communities trying to fight within our own little factions to be seen and heard. And so when I started saying like, I'm severely disabled, somebody came at me and was like, well, you know, you're excluding the rest of us. And I was like, no, I'm really not. I'm just saying like, right now, I want to shine a spotlight on this part of what we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's the reality. It's just the reality of what life is. And like people who have cerebral palsy or MS over spina bifida, it's a different experience. And to just blanket say that all of it is disability and all of it's the same in some ways is just not being authentic and
yeah,
real.
Yeah, it's not being true.
No, and we don't know. I don't. So, for instance, my wife has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and our disabilities show completely different. We, you know, how a day affects her is different than how a day affects me.
Yeah.
What we do, how we tackle chores and how we transit and get around, we have to work with each other. And luckily, we complement one another in our abilities, and things that I can do are sometimes harder for her and things that are harder for her, you know, vice versa. We make that work, but I can't sit here when she is having a bad day where there's a really bad migraine and she can't stand up because she's dizzy. I don't know that experience. That
and you can't just be like, I'm disabled too, I get it. And you're like, no.
No, and we're constantly having to validate one another to be like, it's okay. And we're allowed our space and our way of doing something.
Yeah. And I just think the infighting we have within community, it's really exhausting to be online and be disabled and want to talk about stuff and have other community members be like, well, I don't feel that way. And it's like, well, that's, I'm happy for you, but let's, can we, okay, sure.
Yeah, we're all still individual human beings.
Yeah.
Unique experiences, and we shouldn't take that away from any of our community.
Yeah, and I think all the communities, and I say communities plural because I don't feel like saying one is good. Like, right. I feel like all the communities need their own space sometimes to be like, you know what, I feel like this. Now, because you have CP and you have HIV, I'm sure you deal with ableism on all those levels. How is ableism different when you look at it from an HIV perspective versus a CP perspective?
When I look at it from HIV perspective, it's the language around it, people still being so uneducated about it. And I think almost ironically, we've come so far in HIV advancement, and it's almost like we're so close to, obviously we don't have official cures and all these things, but we're so close to making it manageable in the US. Just to be specific, in the US, if you have access to medicine, I always want to be very clear with that. There's still a lot of places in the world that are struggling with it that don't have access that they should. So in terms of how I'm talking about it right now, in the US, if you have access to medicine, it is so manageable that I think we've almost gotten into a situation where people forget that it either exists in a very real way and that it's still dangerous, it's still deadly if you don't manage it properly, if you don't take the right kind of medication, or people think it's vanished and it's just fixed. So when they hear like HIV, they're like, oh, but they cured that. It's so, the amount of times that I get people that are like, but they cured that. But that's fine now. You're good, right?
Yeah,
it's like, no, that's not how it works. And not herbal supplements and no miracle elixirs.
Just because I take PrEP before I fuck you doesn't mean like it's good. It doesn't mean that it's, what? Like, no.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm so glad we've gotten so far away from that other stigma. So it's weird. Like as a child, HIV and ableism was like, you better not be near me. I don't want to touch the same plate as you. I don't want to be, you know, breathing the same air as you. And now the ableism as an adult with HIV in our generation now currently is, oh, I don't see you because isn't that fine? Isn't that, so it's funny how it's completely done like a 180.
Yeah, yeah.
In a lot of spaces. Because people have just kind of let it be on the back burner. They're like, other hot viruses have come up since then.
a little one called COVID, you know, just a little virus.
I felt like war flashbacks when that happened, because suddenly Dr. Fauci's in the spotlight and I'm like, here we go again, we're back.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so that's kind of, it's different for that. And it's one of those that like, I can kind of get away with not having, you know, you don't have to tell everyone. I personally tell everyone because I want to educate and I want to make it something that you can be aware about and take the moment to have the conversation. And I feel safe enough to do it. I feel like I'm protected enough. I'm not going to get myself into a situation by telling somebody. And there are circumstances where you don't do that. You know, if I'm on a bus and someone's like, what's going on with you? Not the moment, not the time. I'm just going to be like, cerebral palsy. There we go. And move on.
Yeah. But, like, you don't want to, you obviously, like, if you're on a bus, you're like, guess what? I have HIV. Like,
there are very few circumstances. Like, one I did a joke about on Instagram and TikTok where a guy moved into my building. And he was like, so what's the tenants like in here? What are the people like here? And I'm like, oh, well, they're artists, musicians, dancers. He's like, God, it sounds like Rent, except no one here has AIDS. And I was like, funny enough, actually.
Actually, wait, hold on.
Yeah, and I had to. So it was like, in those moments, I'm like, that's just a good opportunity for a joke. So it's
like, I was watching one of your reels this morning, and you did one where you're like, how people think I become disabled, and you're walking down the street and they're like, think you get hit by a bus, but how you actually became disabled is you're in the womb and then you get hit by a bus. I thought that was funny. I loved that. Do you find like, yeah, and a lot of the stuff you do is comedic. A lot of the stuff you do is like funny. It's very, very like bingeable short content. Do you find that it's easier to make people like comfy with disability when it's in a quick, short
Oh, absolutely. And people learn through laughter. Like, it sounds so corny to say that, but they really do. If you can get someone to laugh about something, you can get them to like be educated on it so much faster. People are so quick to turn away on something that they think is going to make them sad or is going to make them like uncomfortable in a way that they're not ready for. And I like to still make people uncomfortable because we got to. But yeah. I'm gonna at least reel you in for a second before I do that.
Yeah.
And I find that it's, it took a lot of trial and error to figure out what worked for people. And, it's fascinating as a content creator. I will do a certain theme or a topic from a few different perspectives. So I'll do a 6-second thing or 18-second thing like that. But then I'll do that same thing in like a 3-minute video that's like a Crip Tips, which is my other thing. Yeah, yeah. I'll do a informative one, or I'll do like a over music with the text playing. And it's my way of like kind of like a social experiment of figuring out like what people gravitate towards. And I find that they all gravitate towards each of those things specifically. It's just the different groups that gravitate towards them.
Yeah.
Change. And finding ways to just get people in. Like, this is a music thing and people like music, so I'll play a little guitar and do a joke. And it's just, I think people are more willing to see the absurdity of things if you can make them laugh or if you can kind of go to the extreme of something. So many people want to logic you. They want to logic brain you into believing their kind of thing. And, oh, well, that's not everyone's circumstance. Or, oh, but that person was just trying to help you. And if you can really stretch that out to the most extreme version of it, it does make people realize like, oh yeah, no, that is kind of laughable and people shouldn't just wheel you off on their own or without asking you
or
if
like
you need
touch you without,
or touch you. And so if you're able to do things that are like that extreme, it forces people to see themselves.
And I think making them laugh also makes them realize that like, I can yell at you, but ableism all day and tell you you're an ableist and tell you to like, how dare you? I can do that. And until I'm blue in the face. And that's valid. That's a valid way of standing up for yourself, but that's exhausting. I would much rather make you laugh a little bit, and I would make you like, oh, if I make you laugh, then you're not scared of me and I don't have to yell at you, and then we can talk about it together.
Yes. And if you're still not there and you want to still yell, go ahead.
Yeah I give you like
all I could.
I think like I understand the anger, but I think because I'm a creator too, so I know like how hard it is to put, and I do written content. So written content is constantly being misinterpreted in different ways. And so I'm like, I always say like, I just want to put the story out there and hope that it resonates. If it didn't resonate with you, like I hope that you can find another thing you enjoy. But I love your content because it's quick. It's like, it's funny. There's always a disability joke in there somewhere. And as a disabled person, like, I like seeing that. I like seeing that content because we never see it. So it's really, really powerful.
Well, thank you. I always joke, I'm like, I'm glad finally my film school degree is paying off,
Right.
Eventually, 10 years later, but at least it's doing something now. But no, I find interesting still about it is the amount of people I'll get who, and this is the one thing I haven't cracked, and I've done jokes about it, but the people who will be like, can I laugh at this? Is this okay to laugh at? I feel like I'm going to go to hell if I laugh at this. And I'm like, I cannot explain it any further to you that like, I'm not serious in this.
The
things I'm doing are so ridiculous that like, if you don't think that they are a joke, then I'm doing something here that's
meant to be absurd so that you laugh at it. And if you like, what I would say back to them is like, if you have these feelings about it, interrogate that within yourself. Why don't you want to laugh at it? Like,
yeah, and why do you think I'm not in on the joke? Or why is it? And that's the fascinating thing of like, do you think I stumbled into this? Do you think I somehow didn't know that I was making a joke, and therefore you don't see me as a full fleshed out human being?
Yeah,
who had spent time crafting and editing and putting music to and writing this thing because I'm an entertainer and that's what I do for a living and that's my job. You somehow think I just, maybe what I have like an assistant who's doing all this for me, and I'm just a puppet.
I would love, first of all, I would love an assistant to do all the formula. Could somebody, like, I would love that. Could someone, listen, Joseph and I will hire you.
Yes.
We'll pay you in love and compliments if you want to work for us. Like, but, and that's one of the things I wanted to ask you too. Like, I see how much work you put into what you do. I see the transitions in your content. And as a, for me, as a disabled person, like, who uses a wheelchair every day and who needs help with everything, that looks like that's exhausting. How do you manage all of that by yourself?
It's time management. It's shooting schedule management, which is kind of the stuff I learned from film school and like production style things where it's like, okay, if I'm going to shoot, I'm going to shoot as much as I can from this angle and everything I need to do this way. If I'm changing wardrobe, I'm only going to shoot everything that I need to in the order that this wardrobe appears. And then I'm going to change and do this. It's also realizing that not every day I'm going to have the energy. So when I have the energy, kind of loading up the shooting things that I'm going to do and recording a bunch of content one day, but maybe editing it another day, or recording a bunch of sketches and then just kind of allocating them and releasing them separately.
A lot of different days. Exactly.
And that's been the thing with what's been amazing with Instagram is like, I've been on TikTok now for 2.5 years, and most of everything, with the exception of a few little things here and there, has been content from TikTok that I've been bringing over to Instagram.
Yeah.
So I've been able to like really conserve my energy to the way I want, and loading myself up ahead of time and knowing, and also knowing it's okay. Like, you know, you hear these things about algorithms and creating content, how much you need to post
and your followers and all the bullshit. And it's like, you know what? I don't care.
Yeah. And it's just like, eventually, if you stop doing it because you like it or you get some sort of joy from it, then it's just not worth it, because you'll never, personally, and this is just personally, I don't think that if I pushed myself to do something I didn't want to do kinds of content that wasn't intriguing to me, but because it would get followers instead, even if I did from that, I would never feel fulfilled or validated, because it would always be kind of a lie. It would always be that I got these followers and this information and these views for something that I don't connect
that
to.
That I didn't want to do. And I think
that I didn't want to do.
Disability creators, we are pigeonholed into this thing where we have to talk about disability a certain way. We have to say a certain thing. We have to talk about it in X, Y, Z terms. And I'm kind of like, well, fuck it. I want to say about disability what I want to say about, like, and if it doesn't resonate with you, cool. Like, all right, that's fine.
What's drawn me to your content has always been the honesty and the just the way of like, yeah, this is a thing that sucks. It's okay for things to suck. It's okay for things to be hard. It's okay for things to not look
pretty. I feel like there was a sex joke in there, but I don't know what it is. But I feel like there was a sex joke in there somewhere.
There's a sex joke in everything. Let's just
correct. No, but you know, my content is very much like, let me be raw, because I feel like a lot of disability content, because we deal with our own internalized ableism, it has to be so geared to making able-bodied people accept us. And I'm kind of like, yeah, I want to do that also, but like at the same time, fuck you, here it is.
Yeah, it's, you have to be, I mean, being positive and trying, you know, it's such a balance. It's a mind fuck. It really is, because I'll find things where I post, and you know, this is just what happens to content creators who are disabled. You'll post something that has nothing to do with like a triumphant moment, and the amount of people who are like, you're so inspiring, and because you're just so inspiring for existing. So it's going to come through that stuff. And I do like being kind, and I like finding nice ways to say things. I refuse to like get into fights with trolls in a way that is like, I'm going to be mean back, because that does no one good.
Yeah, that doesn't do anything. That just makes you.
Yeah. And I've never been into it. And I've seen other creators who've gone down like tunnels to just try to respond to every person. And that becomes almost more important than the content itself.
It's how you respond. And so I've done that. And I went through a period where when I was making content that I would be the angry disabled person, and every able-bodied person was my enemy, and how, and now I'm just like, fuck, I want everybody to join me here. If you don't want to join me here, that's fine. It's cool.
Yes. Yeah. But it's okay to have real content that is multidimensional, and we're not just our illnesses, we're not just our tragedies, we're not just hospital beds, but we're also our hospital beds, and we are tragedies, and we are our illness. And yeah, it's okay to have both and to move with things in a different way. And some days it's okay. You know, I remind myself, like, if I don't have the energy to do skits and sketches and stuff, and I just need to talk about some other stuff, that's fine. And yeah, that's okay too. And people will gravitate towards you. And there is nothing that feels better. And I really do mean this. There's nothing that feels better than when you're being your most brutally honest and you find people that are still relating to that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, is it feeling?
I've talked about my bowel habits so much on the computer. Like, I just tell, you know, I tell my experience of having IBS, of being chronically ill, of having, you know, going through stuff that no one talks about, but it's because no one talks about it. That's why I feel the need to put it out there.
Yeah. And that's great. And you, when you feel people are like, yeah, me too, it's like, awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Like, somebody feels seen here. So you're an actor in New York. And we know that there are not enough roles for disabled folks. And we know that, like, there are not enough stories around disability out there in the world. What kind of story, like if you, maybe you are writing something, but if you like were writing something, well, what kind of stories would you want to see for disabled folks out there in the world right now?
Well, I have a few features that I've written and a pilot and stuff that deal with disability representation. They deal with HIV representation. But for me, it's getting into the nitty gritty of the complexities of our actual communities. And one of the things that I've been working on for a long time is a romantic comedy where it is a born disabled leading man who meets a newly disabled woman, and how that relationship is drastically different, and how he spends more of his time battling his own internalized ableism and excluding himself from the communities because he feels like, I'm so close to quote unquote normal. Whereas she has fully embraced it because her, like you would say, is a severe disability, and it's, you have to embrace it and you have to be on that path, and how they communicate and what that means, and how other people with different disabilities communicate with each other. So often when I'm up for stuff that I see on TV or in films, it's the one person against the world, or it's the one person, able-bodied savior, the me before yous, the all of those sort of things where it's just, you know, inspiration porn, as we say. And it's like, we are still trying to navigate conversations with each other. And I think we get so caught up so often, and even when we're doing auditions and when we're looking at our community and we're like, well, you know, that disability is not really MS, but I have cerebral palsy, but I'm going up for a role that has MS, and how do I feel about that? And authenticity, and where does the line go for how authentic can we get? And do we exclude ourselves from the opportunities because we're not 100% authentic, even though we're disabled? And there's so many intricate moments where we're wanting to have that conversation now. My wife and I have it daily. Every morning we're having this conversation. And then we have to pull back and realize that there's a whole world of entertainment in Hollywood that doesn't even know that, that just goes, no disabled person. And that's the blanket.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
As much as we want to get fine-tuned, and I write stuff that's very specific, we're up against this whole idea that we're still battling just to get disabled seen.
Yeah.
Whatever form that is.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff I'm writing, and writing about HIV and coming of age stuff. That's like what it was like for the early aughts and dealing with HIV and being a like 16-year-old boy who had a chance to be sexually active and rejecting that because of the fear of HIV, and how that's not often seen, even someone who's male at all rejecting sex, and that it can be an uncomfortable thing for a young man to be sexual, and the psychology of that. So that's been a big thing for me, talking about that experience.
I want this already so badly. Well, who can produce it? Do we know anybody? How do we get this? Like, I need this because I think, you know, that experience, I've never seen that in a teen thing before. I've never seen that anywhere before. Like, that's so, it's specific, but it's so necessary.
Yeah, because it's like, you know, everyone loves the horny boy trope. They get it. They know that. They're like, oh, yeah, you're a boy. You're going to be sexual. You're going to be into it. You're going to be crazy about it. And it's like, well, you know, as much as I had my hormones, I was afraid and I was worried and I was scared to have relationships. And it took me years and years to realize that I was putting myself in dating scenarios or relationships that were actively like never going to happen. I either like, you know, I don't believe in friend zoning at this point. I think that's a bad old term personally. Yeah, yeah. But I was putting myself with like, I'd fall for people who were unavailable or I'd fall for people that were way long distance as a kid. And it would be like, why am I doing this to myself? Oh, because this is a scenario in which I could pine for somebody.
And I don't have to do anything.
And I don't have to do, and I could blame it on an external factor that's not me.
Yeah.
That why this is not working. And I could be safe, but I could still have that romanticized idea of things. And it was like, no, you're just setting yourself up for failure because you're afraid to succeed. And so that was just like, I had to overcome that. And I want to, you know, share more about that and being vulnerable as a teenager and being like, I'm not ready for sex. And it, that being okay to say as a male, especially in the early aughts and being alpha and whatever. Yeah.
All that bullshit that is still, you know, in queer spaces, like that is the whole alpha thing. It's still there. And it's like, are we still doing this? Like, why? Yeah. This is so silly.
If you don't mind me saying, I had a, you know, one thing we talked about pansexuality, and I had a brief moment where I was able to come out in between relationships and I wanted to explore my pansexuality. And it was the, there was this, and I, you know, I'm just going to be honest because I think this is a great platform for that.
Yeah.
I felt overwhelming. I tried to do some like gay dating sites at the time, which I don't even know which ones they were at that time. But
yes, Manhunt.
It was, it was some weird. I mean, I'm the dating of Cupid and Plenty of Fish.
Yeah.
On those kind of things. But what had happened was I felt overwhelmed because it was very aggressive. It was very much like, here's my number. I will pick you up. Let's do this.
We're going to go fuck after dinner.
Yeah. And I was just like, I'm just barely coming into my own and trying to say that I'm potentially gay. At that time, I didn't even know because a lot of what had me questioning was and going back and forth because I was attracted to both. So that was confusing, you know, whereas now it's more normalized. But that was confusing. And I had convinced myself that maybe I was, which is very different. I was so accepted by the gay community because of my HIV status, where I'm like, am I gay or do I just like that I'm being accepted?
Yeah.
Do I just like that there's a whole community that's like, hey, HIV, no worries. I got you. And that was enough to make me like question, or did I actually feel this way? And when I would start to try to date, I just felt such an insistence that I didn't drive. So they would be like, oh, I'll pick you up and we'll go out and we'll just go fuck.
And like, and that's scary too. Cause like you're disabled. And so if they take you up and they're a weirdo or something happens or you don't feel safe, like what do you do?
Yeah. And I just, I shut it all down. I like, as quick as I opened it, I like closed everything and I'm like, I'm not ready for this. And it really did give me a perspective on things of like, and it took me a while to come back around. But it definitely was one of those moments. It's like, I think people have a misconception sometimes of, you know, again, we talk about community and communities all being welcoming spaces because they've been excluded from other communities.
And then that's what you expect. And then you get in there and you're like, oh fuck, well, wait, I'm severely disabled. All of a sudden I don't matter here. I'm queer. All of a sudden I don't matter here. What?
Like, yeah, I'm a short king and I'm smaller. So I'm going to be kind of the you know, beta in a lot of people's eyes, and it's like, okay, and I'm disabled, and so I'm afraid to go in your car right now. And
I mean, listen, first of all, you're a hottie, so short kings all the way. But how does, so we've talked about your wife a little bit, and I wanted to understand, because you're married to another person with disabilities, which is amazing, by the way, good for that, amazing. But how does all of this, like, the ableism you experience? How does all of that play into and work within the relationship with your wife?
I mean, we find ourselves in so many situations where it's validating because we finally have someone else by our side that could be like, was that a weird moment? Was that a different moment? Was that an ableism moment? And like for us, it was fascinating. Like I always say she reignited my fire about ableism because I didn't even know went out. And I take a moment. One time we were first starting to date. I was traveling to New York. I was going to LA and going back and forth from LA to New York to see her. And we were here in New York and we were walking around on the High Line and people were getting very weird. And there was a thing that like the elevators were shut down in certain locations. And
of
we
course,
were there
because New York transit and disability is the worst.
Yeah, we know. Exactly. And so we were getting rushed around by security to get to the other side of where we needed to be. And they were getting really pushy about it. And they were being very weird to us. But I remember being like, okay, whatever. Okay, whatever. And, you know, my wife, it's been, she has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. It started to show itself in her, I believe, in her master's program in college. And so it was later in life for her. So it's only been maybe just under a decade. It's been like 7 years, 8 years, yeah, around there. So for her, she was like, I can't stand this. How are they doing this? How are they treating us like this? What we have, you know, this is not right. We deserve better. And this feeling, and I'm like, oh yeah, I mean, I guess so. And I realized like, oh, I'm just going on 30 something years of this being the case. And just, I've gotten to a point where I'm like, I don't know. I guess this is just normal.
Yeah.
She started really like reminding me that it's not okay. And that we are allowed to be mad about that. And so it's a very nice situation to be in because we can always be championing each other. And like now we have this situation happen, which is, you know, she uses a cane most of the time. She has a wheelchair, but she doesn't use it as much. I'm in the wheelchair more often now because I've accepted that that's where my body's at. And that was a long time coming.
The acceptance is fucking hard. I get
it's really
that.
Hard, especially when I've built myself for years and years being like, I'm the guy who went from a wheelchair to a walker, to crutches, to a cane. That's what I did. And I should be able to be that way. And
yeah, yeah.
I failed somehow by going backward.
No, no.
And that's not true. So now I'm in the wheelchair and she has the cane and we're in a situation, and it happens in the airport all the time where they now don't see her as disabled. It's like a weird math problem where two disabled people cancel one of them out and they think that she's my caregiver or my caretaker or my assistant, and that she's like holding her cane, but it's my cane. And so they'll constantly be like, ma'am, you take all of your husband's stuff here. We have to take him through this way.
And she's like, I'm just saying, I get what you want to help.
Yeah. Or we'll travel with my dog, with our dog. And she'll be like, we both need assistance here. And they'll just ignore her and they'll put everything on her and just try to wheel me away. And it becomes this whole thing where like we're thinking at this point we need to get her a t-shirt that says I'm disabled too.
I mean, that could be a really great husband, like disability husband and wife gift. Like that's a great
idea. Like, yeah. It's wild. It's very fascinating. And we're like trying to always figure that out. And it's like we kind of find ourselves discussing things. I mean, every morning, I don't kid you, we spend 4 hours with coffee and just talking every subject we possibly can. It's like every day. And I love it. I wouldn't change it for the world. And we constantly talk about like, is it the type of disability that people are not reacting to? Because, you know, I've been on a cane and I was treated differently when I was on a cane than when I'm in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
Or is it also misogyny? Because people are less likely to talk to a woman on the street a certain way.
Yeah.
And like when I moved into our apartment that she already had before I was here, she didn't really know much of the neighbors. And then by the time I was like 3 months in, I'm like, oh yeah, you know, this person, Jim at like 5L and Sarah at 6-7, you know, 6C. And she's like, how do you know these people? I'm like, they just come up to me and they want to talk. And I don't know how to, like, I'm like, I'm the John Mulaney joke. I'm a mayor of nothing. But people feel this weird way to do that they don't do for her. And she's amazing and beautiful and everyone should be doing the same thing, but we think it's like this misogyny and ableism.
Oh yeah, it definitely is. There's definitely a connection there.
Yeah, and people just want to leave her be, or like if we're together suddenly it just, people can't process it at all. And like It's very interesting. Or we'll take like one mobility aid each, and sometimes we'll like switch. Like we did that, we went to a museum, and halfway through the museum, I got into the wheelchair and she got the cane.
People
and then
were like, what the fuck? What?
And then like, okay, what?
Yeah. But it sounds like you guys have a really cute like thing together. And I think, you know, like that's really important because first of all, we never see disabled folks together because, you know, for those of us who are on assistance, like a lot of us couldn't be together. So the fact that we see you together is so important because we need that representation. We need two disabled folks together, like being like, yeah, we're married, we're happy, we love each other, this is great. Like we never see that. Usually it's able-bodied savior bullshit.
And oh, like, yeah. And I mean, we had our wedding. We had chairs. We sat for our vows and we sat for our actual wedding. And it was like the amount of people on Instagram who were disabled who were like, I never even thought to do that.
I love that so much. That is fucking awesome.
And it was amazing because we were not focused on like shifting our body weight or like being uncomfortable or being watched. Like neither of us, she was like, I don't want to do the traditional thing where everyone watches me as I walk down the aisle. Like that to me is my worst nightmare.
Yeah, yeah.
The idea of everyone watching how I'm stepping and if I'm going to trip.
Yeah.
So we walked together and we did it together. So it wasn't so uncomfortable. And then it wasn't made a highlighted moment.
And you like supported each other. Yeah. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah. And then we just sat and it was just like, I got to listen to the vows and really take that in and read my vows and not be exhausted. And like, it was really wonderful. And it was really surprising how many people reacted to that and seeing that. It was like, oh, right, because we think that's not allowed. We've gotten these archaic ideas of what we need, and we can just do what we want. We can do what's right for our bodies.
I think if I ever get married, which probably won't, but if I ever do, I would want my partner to sit also, even if they were able-bodied, like sit. Yeah.
And being, I mean, and she's way taller than me. And I'm, you know, everyone's way taller than me. A high top bar stool is taller than me.
So, wow.
You know, so it was great in that way. And I love that on a daily basis. I love that. But it was nice to be just like eye level and just be with each other. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you also told me that when we first started talking, you were like, my wife's a big fan. So I want to give her a shout out here because why not? So what's your name?
Her name is Carrie Cox.
Carrie, I hear you're a fan, so I'm here with your husband on the show right now. And if you ever want to come on the show, come and do an interview.
She would love that. She really would.
When she listens, the door is wide open. One of the things we never talk about, and I'd love to talk about with you because you're such an affable guy. I'd love to chat with you about, like, what about disability brings you joy?
I think, you know, and it sounds so cliche, and we just spent this whole conversation being like, oh, I can't stand inspiration stuff. But for me, it shaped everything and every facet of my life, like in an honest way. And I know it's so cliche. I'm almost like vomiting as I'm about to say it.
Go for it.
It honestly, if I didn't have this, and I make the joke a lot, if I wasn't HIV positive or if I wasn't disabled, I would just be another, or if I wasn't pansexual, I'd just be another hetero white dude. And like, I really mean that in the way of like, this has helped me see a part of the world that I think if I didn't have this happen, I would be an entirely different person. There's just no way about it. I would feel entitled to certain things that I'm grateful for now. And I would feel angered by certain things that I just let go because it doesn't matter. And I think disability has given me such a perspective that I could never thank it enough in a really true way. It's made me be a calmer, a more understanding, a more empathetic, a more grounded person. I always said it forced me to stop and smell the roses because I literally could not go fast enough to not do that. And yeah.
That's true though. A lot of us felt like we're never going fast enough. We're never going far enough. We're never like, but you're right. When you're forced to stop and go slower, you look at things a little bit differently.
You do. And you experience the world. And like I said, every day My wife and I, it takes us a long time to get up and get ready and feel that pain and get out of our system or manage it. It never leaves, but manage it. And those mornings of just like, we can't rush. It's just, that's just not something we'll ever be able to do. And that's okay.
Yeah. You mentioned a second ago, pain. I don't think people who don't live with CP understand kind of like there is pain. Can you describe that for us and for you?
It is. Imagine being born with like this buzzing tenseness that never goes away. And to the point where if you do get lucky enough to have a moment of peace from it, and I found that if I'm heavily medicinally inclined in a moment, you suddenly realize what it's like to not have as much pain. And it's a really mind kind of mind fuck because for me at least, I live at, you know, I hate pain scales from doctors and like, are you on a 7? Are you 8? I'm like, I don't know, because I think your 7 is my 19. So
yeah,
where that's at. And so it's just like this weird tense buzzing that I feel of like, I'm never at ease. I'm never fully relaxed. And it just, it's a constant pain that you just kind of have to, because you have to live, kind of forget about. And till you're reminded, it's like walking off the cliff in a Looney Tunes cartoon. It's like, if you don't look down, you'll keep walking.
Yeah.
But if you're down for a second, you're going to stop. And you're like, that's how I feel. I don't lay down a lot during the day. And it's not that I don't want to. It's that I find myself, if I do on a day that I need to do stuff, I'm not getting back up.
Yeah.
Because that's the only time that I really feel my body eases itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that way too. When I was younger, they used to say, Andrew, your tone's at a 2 always. I would never get a 0, never hit a 0. And so I constantly feel like my tone is always between 2 and 7 all the time. And it's like, oh yeah, all right. Like, so I understand that feeling of never quite being able to relax and never quite being comfortable in your body.
Yeah. It's unsettling.
Yeah, for sure. And then the flip side of that, I want to ask you, because we never talk about this either. What about all of this disability stuff brings you grief? And I think it's important that we talk about grief because disability grief is real. And we're always forced to talk about the like overly toxic positive parts about our lives and never really delve into the shitty stuff. So I'm offering that as a question for you.
I'll give you an example. I'll give you a scenario. Anytime I get on an airplane ahead of everyone else and I get to put my cane away and I get to just sit and watch as people get onto the plane and people sit next to me and we spend whatever 5 to 6 hours or so in the air.
Yeah.
Just talking. And it's just normal. And it's just weather and it's just life and politics and what are you doing in what town you're in? And that great, normal, easy moment and how that can go away the moment I pull the cane out from above that, you know, storage
thing. Yeah.
And watching as all that shifts and realizing that I never get that in my full day. I never get that in my daily life. And I've never known what that's like because I've always been disabled. And as much as it's like to a better of loved and lost and to have never loved at all, for me, it's like, I don't know. I would have loved to know what it's like to just exist in a space where my disability wasn't constantly being questioned or asked about or prodded or looked at or been the highlight of every moment. Even in spaces when they're trying their best to do things differently, even in spaces when they want to be inclusive, the act of inclusion means that you have to be a spotlight. And the best thing you could do sometimes, and the thing you want the most more than anything sometimes, is to just not be the spotlight. Even when it's positive, you just want to be just like other people.
I totally agree. And I think because we put ourselves as content creators in a place where we have shone the spotlight on ourselves, I almost feel bad saying like, I don't want to talk about it today. I don't want to deal with it today. I want it to go away.
Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I've done a few content shoots where it's like, you know, just a joke, just a different joke, a different kind of sketch, like a 90s like rock music parody thing, or like a thing where I don't show my wheelchair, I don't show my, which I have the privilege of that sometimes, to not show that stuff. And like sitting on the couch and like showing like the, I think I did one where I was like the first man to connect the, to figure out the G string, whatever, stupid things. And like, you know, and make that joke. And it's like watching those videos get their kind of traction or the comments that are on those videos as opposed to anything else I do, and realizing like we live in different worlds, you know, than other content creators.
Yeah.
The focus is so different, and like being able to just have somebody laugh. I didn't share this earlier, but the first show I ever did as an actor, the thing that made me really love being an actor was it was a parody kind of thing of Jekyll and Hyde. And it was set in high school, and my character was a man trapped, a dog trapped in a man's body. And so the whole time I was on all fours, and I was playing a dog that was like figuring out how to use a human body.
Yeah.
And everyone who came up to me after the show was over was like, I didn't even know you were disabled. I thought you were just doing that thing for the play. And this idea of people who were like just seeing me and just seeing the like performer. And like that moment of like, oh, you weren't thinking about me this way. You weren't sad about me. You weren't like inspired by me. Yeah. You just thought I was a character for a second.
And now all of a sudden all of this reality hits you, and it's a lot for you as the person living it to deal with.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree that grief of like, when I get on an airplane, I mean, my grief is like, are they going to fuck my chair up today? Am I going to lose my legs for the next day? But I get it. Like, and I have the grief of the same thing of like, when I go on an airplane, they're never going to know that I'm, they're never going to wonder, is he disabled or not? They're going to know for sure I'm disabled because guys had to lift me in the seat, and it's a whole thing. And like, but I fully understand that moment of like wishing you could just for 30 seconds, nobody would know.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but it's, I think it's okay to, like you said, it's okay to grieve that. And it's okay to realize that that's just part of who you are. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think we don't delve into those parts enough. And so my like favorite space to go is like, what's the dark shit that you're afraid to talk about? Like, let's go there. And so, but I think, you know, I think that you, the stuff you do is so important. Oh yeah. One question that I wanted to ask you before we end here. So you do a thing on your channel called Crip Tips, which I love, because I also do a thing called Pro Crip Tips on my channel. And so you give like really like funny, kind of quirky crip tips. Like, what if somebody is trying to navigate somebody with CP or a mobility disability, what is a tip that you would give them so that they can confront their own ableism better?
I would say, honestly, trust in yourself. And I say that, I know it sounds vague, but we're so constantly having to prove to every single person. I always say that we have to reach zero. We have to reach the like minimum thing that everyone else is allowed to just live off of and be assumed that you're competent, assume that you're able to do things, assume that you're just a capable, quote unquote, human being. We're trying so hard to just meet basic needs, meet neutral. And that, even though that's not going to just go away, trust that you're capable. Trust that you know what you're doing. Trust your gut, and don't let ableists or able-bodied people make you second guess yourself and second guess what you're actually able to do. And you'd probably be surprised how much you'd get done in the way that you need to do it. It's okay to do things the way we need to do them. Yeah. You know, I would say it might look different. It might look strange. It might look slower. We're doing it the way we need to do it. And that's okay. We don't need to step in.
And I just, I think also it's okay to be mad about that too. Like, to be pissed off that you can't, you know, that it takes you an extra hour or so to get up. It's all right to be a little bit mad about that. But then you got to move on. You can't live there because.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I could sit and talk with you for hours and hours, Marcus. This is so fun and you're so cool. Like, I'm so glad we finally connected.
I'm so happy to do this, and it's been an absolute blast.
It was such a pleasure. Do you have any final things you want to say to the people?
Just own your shit.
All right, well, and how do the people get a hold of you? How can they support you, follow you?
On Instagram and TikTok, you could find me at Joseph A. Kibler. I guess Joseph Kibler was taken. I don't know whoever is out there. I'm coming for you. I'm gonna take that spot again. But yeah, you can find me on Joseph A. Kibler on YouTube, on Instagram, Threads, and all the good things.
All the places. Cool. I'll make sure that's in the show notes. Yeah, this is such a blast, man. Thank you so much for being here today. And tell your beautiful wife that if she would love to come on the show, she's more than welcome.
Well, I'll tell her the moment she comes back from her singing workshop.
Amazing. Yeah, let her know. This is such a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on Disability After Dark, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Bye. I loved having Joseph on and chatting with him about his experience, and I love just having an organic, chill chat like that. It's really, really fun and really awesome to hear him talk so openly about his experience being HIV positive and disabled. I really loved all the things he had to say. So valuable, and I'm just really honored that he wanted to come on the show. I would love to invite you on the show if you want to come and share your disability experience, whatever that may be, or if you're non-disabled and you want to ask me experience, you want to ask me questions about disability, I would love to invite you on the show as well. So be sure to reach out to me. Just remember our email has changed. It's now andrew@andrewgerza.com. Email me at andrew@andrewgerza.com, and I would love to invite you on the program to shine a red light on your disability story. So now here's the outro that you always hear. Thank you for being here, and we'll be back next week with a new episode. I'm thinking I might do some sexy episodes. I'm thinking about writing a porn. Maybe that'll be an episode soon. I don't know. We'll see. So thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye. All right, friends. Well, there goes another episode of Disability After Dark, the podcast shining a bright light on disability stories with me, your host, Andrew Gerza. If you want to follow my work, you can head over to my social media, AndrewGerza6 on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok, although I never use it. If you want to follow my website and find out about my speaking opportunities, my gigs, and ways to have me come to your event, go to www.andrewgerza.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can go to patreon.com/disabilityafterdark, and you can get the show days early, completely ad-free, and a shout-out on the air. So if you want to support the show, you're able to do that. And please, please, leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. It really does help shows like this about disability, which are very rare, get supported. Thank you so much for being with us, and stay comfy, cozy, and crippled. Until next time, bye. Copyright notice. Disability After Dark was created, recorded, and produced by Cripple & Co. Productions and Andrew Gerza. Any and all use of materials, graphics, audio recordings, etc. cannot be used or distributed without express permission. If you would like to use an episode of the podcast or license an episode of the podcast on your website, please consider emailing Andrew Gerza and Cripple & Co. Productions at disabilityafterdarkpod@gmail.com. Copyright 2024.